Before us, the next on the agenda is episode number 2, the Spectrum. Introduce yourselves and we'll listen intently.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Larry Lynch, I'm Spectrum LNG, and I've got with me Bob Stinson from Telegram, and Pete Haynes, also the Spectrum. And if it's all right, I'd just say, get closer to the slides because I can't reach it from this chair. So if everybody can hear me, all right, that's all right. Let's go into it. We don't have a lot of time. We've got a lot of information covered, so I'm going to apologize in advance. I'm going to move through it fairly quickly, and you guys can feel free to stop me if you want to, or wait till the end if you need to get an answer to the questions. Our approach to this is a little bit different than some of the others. The commercial decisions have been made. The state wants to build an LNG plant. They want it to be a 9 BCF plant. The question is how to best build one now, we think. And so we think the best way to do it is to start with an experienced team, and I want to go through that a little bit about some of our experiences, and I'll try and go through it fairly quickly and save time for questions. We also think the plant site's very important. We think plant design is very important. The execution team, all of these are the key issues. And let's go ahead and go through the next. Just a real quick run through. Jeff Holmberg's been in Alaska all his life. He's helped build LNG plants in Arizona, built the largest diesel dealership in Prudhoe Bay. He's built another aviation dealership. My wife Shannon, who's an engineer from Arco, also was involved more than Eclipse and did some of the process engineering there and helped develop it as well as the Spectrum LNG. Mark Twain is an investor in Spectrum as well as Northern Eclipse, one of the original, some of the founding capital there. Keith is here today. Keith joined us at Fairbanks Natural Gas, and we developed that company, actually Northern Eclipse, and then we started Fairbanks Natural Gas. Brian is our former corporate lawyer. He's been with us in Orgasco, Northern Eclipse, FNG, Spectrum. He's done all of the corporate work on that. Jeff Lohenfeld represents at the APUC back in the day in the RCA. Greg came to work for us. He's now the plant manager at our Ehrenberg plant down in Arizona. Prior to that, he was a UAA graduate in economics and came to work for us at Orgasco and also with Fairbanks Natural Gas. Rich Caprainer is actually in the other room, I think. He's probably in Orgasco now. He was there when we founded Orgasco, and he was a process engineer on the Point McKenzie LNG plant. And he stayed after we sold our interest in it, and we helped do the expansion work on that. And this is part of the team that actually did the design work for the design to make LNG. Susanna Kennedy, the chemical engineer, works for us in Arizona. She's our permitting engineer and compliance officer. Charlie Helm is not working for us right now. He has worked for us at 5 different enterprises. He works for the U.S. Department of Transportation. He's in charge of LNG for them. He's one of their key experts. Engineering support, we've got a lot of engineering support, but on this project right now, we're focused on Quanta and SME. SME is that diffusion of specialized mechanical equipment. These are the people that sell the components we need to buy to make this plant work. We've been dealing with SME since the last plant, the one before that. Contractors, we haven't used a lot of contractors in the past on other projects. They're a little bit small. We did use Con Am on the Eclipse plant. We used them at Norgansco, and we're going to use them in this project. Bob's here representing Con Am. They're a fairly large company in the state of Alaska, and one of the better contractors on the North Slope. And we've got a lot of other what I call go-to people, experts that we've dealt with over the years, and we have any kind of expert that you can use. Next slide, please. Some of our history, we founded Norgansco in 1985. 28 years of safe delivery, over 22 BCF has been delivered to date. Founded Coville in 1986. It's interesting, Jeff founded that and when he did Orgasco, and we were competitors and we're partners on it. We conceived Northern Eclipse and designed the Point McKenzie LNG plant that started in 93, developed Fairbanks Natural Gas in 96. We obtained the certificate of public convenience and necessity, which is they don't just give those away. And we delivered first gas to Fairbanks in 1997, built Spectrum Energy Services in 2000, we do that of import terminal patents. And then we designed and own and operate the Ehrenberg LNG plant, which makes about 60,000 gallons today. So of the proponents today, we can produce more than anybody else. At Norgansco, we had to, there's been a lot of talk about gas supplies. I can tell you, in the 80s, we signed the first arm's length gas sales agreement with ARCO Alaska. Harold Hines was president at the time. I'll let you know, Harold. It was a 40-page contract, took us 9 months. We then moved on to a deal with Sahino PP for 9 pages, 2 weeks. That time we got down to 1-page deal, and we got it done in a couple of days. It never even turned into an actual contract. We took gas out of that letter agreement for like 18 months. We also purchased gas from Conoco before it was Conoco Phillips. We bought gas from MLS and Phillips for Troy. We had a big uphill battle with NANA. It was a lot like GCI and Alascom in the day, the late 80s, to get that market secured for us. And now, today, it's moved over 22.5 BCF of gas. It saved a lot of people a lot of money there. After we finished up in Prudhoe Bay, we moved on to work on Fairbanks, another gas development in Alaska. We looked at Girdwood, and Girdwood got away from us because of the pipeline. We did do tap treatment. Dan mentioned that, and I got a call from Howard Nugent, who built the hotel, the complex for Siri, and he wanted to make it happen, and together we did. We started developing plans, you know, for Point McKenzie, and we bought the land in 94. By 97, we produced gas to both Fairbanks and Tucky. What happened? The way we did it, the plant, we couldn't just overspend. We're very cost conscious on the CapEx. We didn't have a lot of money to work with. We bought some unused surplus equipment down in Texas and redesigned it to produce LNG. Most of the design work we did in-house, and 90% of the work that was done at the site we did in-house. And like, for example, Lowe had a plant manager out there for LNG or the Tentex or whoever runs it now. We concurrently developed FNG. We got the utility certificate for it. There were a lot of right-of-way issues. We had to break a lot of ground there. LNG satellite development, we had to get a waiver from the U.S. Department of Transportation to put that tank that close to the airport. It was a trip to Washington. We had to install a lot of pipes and so forth. Next slide. This is a picture of the plant at Point McKenzie for the next one. We did it. We did deliver it to Fairbanks in 97. We started converting houses and so forth to run on natural gas. We fought an uphill battle there. We ran that market below $8. Today they're in it at $23. And with oil above 30, you could do that. But back in the day when the diesel was $1 a gallon, it was a tough road. And we're no longer affiliated with FNG or Northern Folks, just for the record. Next slide. In 2006, we purchased the remnants of another LNG plant that was similar in design to the Point McKenzie plant. We planned to install it in Prudhoe. We changed to Ehrenberg and Clean Energy signed a take-or-pay agreement. So that's an off-take agreement that's really important to gas plant developers. When Boone Pickens' group decided to do that, we directed and went to a location on the Arizona-California border. We leased the land. We redesigned the old Rosenberg plant, rebuilt it, permitted it, installed it, and it's running today. We're now the lowest priced LNG producer in the United States. Recently agreed with Clean to expand to 65,000 gallons a day, our offtake agreement. Well, that's the minimum. Typically, they take 5,000 to 10,000 more than that. So we're trying to walk that particular plant up to about 100,000 gallons a day. We are also developing a second site in Arizona and another site in Oklahoma as well. This is where the Ehrenberg plant is. It's right between Phoenix and L.A. It's right on the Colorado River on the Arizona side. That's a picture of the plant. It sits on 4.5 acres. It is a tight fit. I wouldn't want to try and put anything else in there. That's what it looks like. El Paso Pipeline ties into TransCanada. This is TransCanada over here. This is our plant right in here. And also, just across the river is SoCal Gas and Pacific Gas and Electric. This is the SoCal River crossing point. It's kind of like the Henry Hub. You hear a lot about Henry Hub in Henry, Louisiana, especially with pipes on these. This is where the pipes all meet in the western United States. This is the plant. Looking to the north, this is what it looks like. It's an electric drive plant. It's a turbo expander. It's a kind of a hybrid plant. We have a propane refrigeration on the front end of it as well. A couple of LNG tanks back here. Go ahead. There's the two tanks. This is looking to the south. You see the scale. Next slide. This is what we do. We do it 5 to 7 times a day. It's just an LNG trailer. We pull it in there and we're filling it up. And we includes that. Fundamentally, all we're trying to get done here, we just want to do it more frequently than 5 to 7 times a day. Next slide. This is what it looks like. This is our cash register. Next slide. This is where our product goes right now. Dan talked about motor fuels and so forth. Now, we have 2 trucks in Alaska. Dan does, and I take that out to him. I'm proud that they embraced it. We're a big believer in it. Con-Am had ordered 2 Peterbilt fuels, and they're having to delay it now for the lack of fuel supply. But this is the market. This is a growing market in North 48. We're doubling our plant in Arizona. We're building 2 more plants to address this market. It's not just trucks. It's drilling rigs. It's frac units. It's a lot of things that we're doing with LNG now. Go ahead. Okay, there are 5 merchant LNG plants west of the Mississippi. We developed 2 of the 5. 4 natural gas distribution companies in Alaska, we developed 2 of these.
Ruth, let me interrupt if I could explain the merchant plant, please.
We kind of categorize LNG plants as being built for 1 of 2 purposes. Either the merchant functions where you're selling it by truck and it's going to, could be going to pipelines, it could be going to truck fuel. Or you've got it situated next to a pretty large tank for peak shaving application. If you go east of the Mississippi, there are a lot of peak shavers where a utility has a pipe and the pipe's too small in the wintertime, so in the summertime they take gas out of the pipe and liquefy it, put it in the tank, and then in the wintertime when the pipe can't keep up, they come back out of the tank and vaporize it. That's a peak shaver. And these are all merchant ones.
Good, thank you.
There are other fuel points. There are other LNG supplies, but they weren't purpose-built. So when I'm talking about a merchant plant, I'm talking about purpose-built for LNG, say, for the motor fuel market, versus a nitrogen rejection unit or some of these other plants that process and has a little bit of the size of energy. We've led in multiple gas development projects and enjoy doing that. And we, when we look back on it, we have 7 enterprises that are out there. We continue profitable operations today. Suitable plant sites, another big item. We were flattered to find out that CD&I picked the same exact spot we did. It's a pretty big state, you know, it's a pretty big national area. And when you look at it, you'll see that, that for a number of reasons we picked it, and so did they. We made a lot of investments in it to get it secure, permits and so forth, and the actual lease. ADA's familiar with our permits. They studied that. The only big permit that's outstanding is the air permit. We'll get it by March. We didn't need to hire any help to identify what we needed, what's going to be required. We knew from our past experience. And fundamentally, the big point is we've never been denied any permit we've ever sought or any product we went after. Here's the site. Here's Flow Station 3, if you're familiar with the Eagle Bay area. Here's our site. Fuel site 14, and this is the ADA site, they call it Pad B, and it's just about 2,000-3,000 feet away. It's a good neighborhood for plants. This is what it looked like last December when I was up there. Back up the picture, you can see that's Flow Station 3 in the background. This is the Spine Road, and this is the area. This is this power line you see here. Back up one more. That's this power line right here. So this area, we like it because it's kind of, it's got some natural boundaries to encroachment. You know, you've got a power line and a lake, you've got the road and another lake. A little bit of area here, but not much. And then we've got pipelines on this side. Our closest facility over here is the flare manifold from Flow Station 3. I mean, this thing is designed to burn. So we've got a really good site. We spent 2 or 3 months working with the state and BP on picking out the optimal site. But convenient gas supply is required, you gotta have a gas supply. Our site's got the shortest distance to the gas from anybody's proposal. We're 1,100 feet. Pad B is probably 2,000-3,000 feet, 2,200 feet. And FNG site, or Polar site, is over 3 miles further. Our connection point's not even gonna require a hot tap. We have a valve we picked out, we can just tie into. The gas pipeline requires a right-of-way. That 1,100-foot pipe, we had to go down to the utility commission and spend 180 days down there going through the process to become a common carrier, certificated common carrier. We did that. We have a gas supply agreement with Norgasco right now. It's good enough to give us all the gas we need for construction and testing and so forth like that. We don't think it's the right gas supply agreement. to go into production with. And we don't think anybody's going to get the right gas supply agreement until somebody actually makes the final investment decision and becomes a serious buyer of natural gas from the producers. The market's not working quite right in the gas market here yet. But it will be once somebody seriously actually takes delivery of gas instead of just continue to talk about it. Go ahead. This is the connection point. This point is a little different than the others. Both of the other proponents have tie-in locations. This will only give them access to the 24-inch fuel gas system. This pipe that was had to be taken out of service for pigging a few years ago. And when they did it, and that's the first time they've done it since 1977, they put it in service. This jumper was installed. And this piece right here, this goes into the flow station. This comes out of the flow station. This is a resid gas line that goes out to be processed from stripped NGLs. With this tie-in point, if this pipeline goes out of service, the other two plant locations will shut down. Ours will close this valve and open this valve, and we'll take resid gas out of flow station 3 and continue to operate. So this pipeline doesn't go down very often. I can tell you where gas goes depends on this pipeline. We tap this line on the other side of the field. But if it does, we at least have the option at this location without having to make any operational changes except close the valve and open the valve, and we can be on two different gas supplies. Go ahead. This is that 1,100 foot of pipe. We had to get that situation. Go ahead. Better picture. Pump station 1 is over here, flow station 3. We thought about coming over here. It's a little bit longer drive. It's not a bad location, but the state, it came down to, well, it's a little further away from pump station 1, so we go that way. So we did. And it also had better boundaries to development around it. So we signed this lease. Joe Balash is the new commissioner of ENR. We signed this lease in September. Go ahead. Now we've got the utility certificate I mentioned earlier. This is actually the order that granted it. Go ahead. This isn't an absolute requirement, but development goes better if you get it. Letter from BP saying that they don't object to it. Go ahead. Our trucks are going to roll, or whoever's trucks for this project are going to roll on their roads. The roads are a sensitive issue in Prudhoe Bay, but BP does maintain them. They are on state land, and we needed an agreement to make sure everything goes smoothly. So we got this road use agreement with BP hammered out. Next. You got to have this Corps of Engineers permit to put gravel. And in order to get this, you got to go to the EPA, Fish and Wildlife, and make a deal with them. We have to buy 15 acres of I'm calling it that flat. What's the proper name?
Township?
Yeah, and I call it outside mitigation. So we've got to buy 15 acres and put nature conservatory dedicated to the military. It'll be duckland forever. That was a trade we made. And there were a number of other issues that came up to get that Corps of Engineers permit. Now, let's talk about plant design for a second. We didn't go into this thinking we wanted a mixed refrigerant plant. We went into it thinking we want the most efficient plant. So we looked at all of them, and we operated. We designed and built two. We didn't go with our existing designs. We went with a different design. And you've heard talk today about nitrogen and mixed refrigerant. The big plant, that you were thinking about, the one they look at, scan gas is a mixed refrigerant plant, am I correct? Okay. Is it direct drive or electric drive? Okay, so mixed refrigerant and nitrogen. I can tell you the guy that sponsors most of the nitrogen plants in the United States, I had a conversation with him last month, and he'll tell you this, and he finally made it public, is the nitrogen cycle comes very close to being as efficient as a mixed refrigerant cycle if your methane stream is pure. Mm-hmm. And I'll agree with him on that. But we're not dealing with the pure methane stream. And then the other issue that was brought up about mixed refrigerant is in your compressor building, that building's not going to be much bigger than this room. Okay? It'll be a little bit taller, a little bit longer. And the notion of having hydrocarbon gas, the mixed refrigerant, the threat of having a leak. Well, this is something we deal with in almost every facility in Prudhoe Bay. And you're going to deal with it because you've got natural gas coming in, and not to mention the fact that you're going to be to begin with. So we're not too concerned about the additional expense of dealing with a mixed refrigerant in a confined area. We don't think it's that big of an issue. And we've operated a lot of production facilities that have the same components as the mixed refrigerant does in them. So we were more focused on reliability. Reliability does minimize moving parts. That talks about direct drive on your compressor. Let's take the engine and hook it straight to the compressor. Let's not have that electric link in between. You take an engine and hook it to a generator and go through some switch gear and go through another motor and then go through a compressor. And what you've got is a whole other chain to fail. You've got two more rotating equipment parts and you've got some solids or motor controls and things like that that could add problems as well. Operability, I'll give them that. That's on a nitrogen plant. It's the difference between having an automatic transmission and a standard transmission. You can't drive a standard, you get a nitrogen plant. But you'll never hop in an 18-wheeler and see a standard transmission. An automatic. You can go buy a pickup truck and you can have that and it'll have an automatic and that's fine. That's kind of what the nitrogen cycle does for you. It's real simple, easy to operate. You get into your bigger stuff and you're more concerned about efficiency and performance. And let's talk about that performance for just a second, because when you direct couple that engine to the compressor and you take a turbine engine and you give it colder air, it has more horsepower. If it's not limited on RPM, if you can speed it up, you will make more LNG. And one of our trains will make 150,000 gallons in the summertime with about 70-degree air coming in. When you put 0-degree air into it in the wintertime, it's going to make 200,000. Now, what that means is your 9 BCF plant in July turns into a 12 BCF plant in January. Because we can speed this thing up. This engine has more power. And because we don't have that electric link in it, we're not restricted from using it. So we like to think about it as a producer. This is turned up, not turned down. And by the way, you can turn it down. Our beef with turning them down, the efficiency falls off. So your miles per gallon actually fall to a lower level. Anybody can turn it down. We just think it's better to fill the tank up and turn it off. So efficiency was what was driving us to begin with. And we came up with a mixed refrigerant. We found that the bigger plants, your world-class plants, you won't find a nitrogen plant in a world-class plant. You'll see mixed refrigerant, you'll see cascade systems, things like that, but you won't see nitrogen. Simplicity is really important to us. We wanted it to, let's take that electric link out, let's have our engine driving that compressor. That's pretty simple, and yes, you do have to adjust your mixture. But what we found in our operations in Perrenburg, with our employee bonus program, is tied to plant efficiency. It's amazing how that works out. It's kind of like our CapEx is tied to our wallets. That's what we're driving this. We also take that electric chain, that electric link out. Let's get rid of that cost. Go ahead, next slide. So we looked at the turbo standard nitrogen cycle. Let's talk about all of them. We weren't prejudiced going into the selection process. We eyes wide open. I can tell you we went through this. We spent a lot of time and money studying it. And we came to the conclusion that we could make a mixed refrigerant plant come down in scale, down to this 150,000 to 200,000. We can do it with a basically a 6,000 horsepower solar turbine. This is the boron plant that Dan mentioned earlier. There's a couple of Cosmodyne trains here. These are nitrogen cycles. That's what they chose to go with. It's electric drive. They have a switch gear. I think this is their switch gear yard right here. They have a substation like we do. A lot of electricity. Go ahead. This is our closest competitor. This is in Topak, Arizona, about 100 miles north of our plant in Ehrenberg, also on the border. This is an El Paso pipeline station right over here. Now, this unit is a mixed refrigerant turbine drive. And it was a for-profit deal. So these are guys that are, and they just decided, they just are doubling the capacity. And they went through the same process we did, and lo and behold, they came up and said, we can find out a turbine-driven mixed refrigerant plant. Because it's the one you're going to reduce your cost and make the most money. Just that simple. Go ahead. This is a plant in Willis, Texas, just north of Houston. It belongs to Clean Energy now. CB&I built this plant. Chicago Bridge and Iron designed it and built it. It is a mixed refrigerant plant. Electric drive. Now, they went electric on this because right across that this picture is a power plant. Now, this plant also has a tail gas stream.
and they made a deal with the power plant to buy it. So they sell them the tail gas and they buy their electricity. There's a relationship going on there. But that plant wants to clean, and it can make about 85,000 gallons a day also. Go ahead. I pulled this off the website yesterday. Lindy, and this is, I guess, the sand gas process. Same basic things are, I was joking with my guys, they stole our design. Lindy did. You know, you've got your metering station, your CO2 removal, this is an amine plant. Boy, it's going to be a big one, too. We were taking out a lot of CO2. Then you got a dryer, some molecular sieve set up. In this natural gas liquefaction unit, this is a mixed refrigerant. That's all we're talking about. What are we using for refrigerant? What is freon, propane, all these other choices? Nitrogen or butane or pentane. These all work, but some work better than others. And then you got LNG storage and no ships involved. Anyway, this is the Lindy process. The one that you go back up, Chicago Bridge and Iron, Lindy was mixed refrigerant. So when you hear the differences and you talk to people about the difference, and it's just different from the standard transmission, automatic transmission. If you can't handle it, standard, then you've got to get it automatic. But it's not going to be efficient from the standard. We modeled them all. We made the decision. We went with the Centaur 50. Caterpillar has got good service in Prudhoe Bay. They've got a lot of units up there. They've got technicians on the float. They have spare engines. And they can put a spare engine on the plane and fly it out to you pretty quick. Now, we'll get a spare compressor because those are unique to the application. But the engines are very similar. It allows for much greater efficiency. There are two big efficiency gains you get when you go with this design. One is from the cold air. They both come from cold. Cold air goes in the throat of that engine, and it gives you more horsepower. So it goes from 5,700 horsepower to 6,400 horsepower. It's the same thing on the airplanes. You guys know that the numbers on the jets and so forth, when they go up high, they're going to get colder and work better. The other gain you get is how you can get to adjust the mixture refrigerant to work better and be more efficient in lower temperatures. You remove some of the heavier components in your refrigerant makeup and you go into lower temperature. We only model this down to zero. And we go to 6,400 horsepower to zero. And I was talking to the vendors and said, well, what's it look like at minus 20 or minus 30? And we decided not to spend the money to find out because we've already gone from 150,000 to 200,000 gallons to zero. So, again, a 9 BCF plant, the net system cost is only 12 BCF in the wintertime. That's a big gain. It's a big difference. And we corrected it. And I don't think anybody can argue that a mechanical direct drive is more efficient than an electric drive. I don't care whose generator motor you use, they're each going to lose about 3-5% either way when you turn it into electricity and then turn it back into horsepower. We also want to minimize moving parts. I've had generator failures. I've had motor failures. We've dropped bearings. We've had windings burn up. We've had problems with DL and the electric drive plant. We have a lot of motors. We have a lot of high voltage stuff. We built a 59,000-volt substation. We have hands-on experience with all the 5 kV motors and everything. We've been there and done it. And there's some nice features to it. It sure is nice to be able to just go up and push a button and have it spin up. And that's kind of what Cosmodyne did with their design, or the CB&I design with the nitrogen thing. But what you did, to be able to push the button, is you just committed to build a power plant next door. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about building a power plant. That's an expensive process, too. And, of course, we can adjust the refrigerant to our next summer versus winter. Go ahead. So we've got the land leased. We've got the non-objection letter. We've got the road use. We've got the time point selected. We're working on the details of the actual how you come off of that valve and things like that. There's some details we have to work out with the Prudhoe Bay unit. And then we've got this RCA certificate. We've got the gravel permit. We're working the air permit. We'll have it in March 2015. We've selected our process, our train size, and the detailed engineering is in progress. And it's expandable to 18 BCF. Now, that's 18 BCF in the summer. The winter would be about 24 BCF at that site. Next slide. So we have to have a good development plan. We've engaged TPS Engineering to help us with this.
Hey, Ray, I'm going to give you FYI. I got about 10 minutes, and then we want about 10 minutes for Q&A. So, yeah. 110, wherever you're at in this, that's where it's going to end up.
Okay.
Okay.
I should get a couple guys to go. I'll run through this real quick. TPS has got 250 people. I can promise you they're well qualified. We're reducing our risk by using Con-Am as a constructor and TPS as an engineer. They both belong to the same parent company. So our execution team is Spectrum, TPS, and Con-Am. Go ahead. I'm going to hand it over to Bob here. Bob started his career in 1973. He's here for the TAPS in 1975. He founded Con-Am with some other folks and then became president in 1993. And with that, I'm going to let Bob Gill talk about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm much slower talking, so you'll be able to follow me a little better. There's a lot of words on here, so we don't have time, so I'm going to summarize what each slide really is trying to convey. We do a lot of projects just like this in the state, in Prudhoe Bay especially, anywhere from $100,000 to $70 million. Here's a list of some of the projects that we've done, pretty large man-hour projects for ConocoPhillips, BP. They all involve modular construction. They all involve doing it on the North Slope in the summer or the winter. And they're complicated. They're big projects. This is the one right here that we created the tap for the Spectrum gas feed. So next slide. We have one of the largest equipment teams in Prudhoe Bay. We have a dead horse facility. Basically all this is in. We're in it for the long run. We like to develop long-term relationships with our clients. You have to do that in Alaska. And I started with Ray and built part of that McKinsey plant, a very small portion, and it may pay off here in the future. So next slide. Quanta is our parent company. Quanta is an S&P 500 company, and they purchased Con-Am in 2009, so we've been sort of transformed into the public arena. But with that, we've been able to capitalize off of what Quanta has to offer, which is a lot of sister companies that do engineering, fabrication, supporting the oil and gas industry in the lower 48. We're their go-to people in Alaska. They give us a lot of ability to do what we think we need to do in Alaska to support our market and our customers. One of the things that we really like about being owned by Quanta is that they provide expertise in engineering and procurement, so you get we're able to do a lot more EPC type contracts. In fact, we were just awarded one for the municipality of Anchorage building their power plant. The other thing is they're well capitalized, so they have the ability to offer to their operating units, which Con-Am is one. Vehicles for construction financing to help projects like this advance. So next slide. This particular project is really nice size. It really fits what Con-Am does, what we've done over the years. I'll get into the project schedule in just a minute, but it really seems like it. It's a very doable project as far as the projects that are done on the North Slope that we've done in the past. So let's go on to the next one. Here's a bird's eye view of the site with the feed gas coming in here with the 1,100-foot pipeline. Pretty straightforward layout. There's actually lots of room for construction and operation. So next slide. Here's an ISO view. Let's go to the next slide. Here's a view of the corner where the process trains are. Again, very well laid out with room for two more trains that would get you up to, how many BCF, right, 18? Yeah. Okay, next slide. There's a lot of advantages to this project. I'm not going to go into them, but one of the things that we like about having LNG on the slope is we're trying to convert our actual equipment fleet, and we see a lot of promise to use LNG across the slope for all the contractors up there and for efficiency of operation and costs. So let's go on to the next one. Here's a schedule that is very well laid out. It makes a lot of sense to us. It we've looked at quite hard, both in cost and scheduling. We can back up, raise capital costs with a lot of construction estimating that we've done, and it also has a lot of float in it, which always makes the contractor feel comfortable. This is today, and this is August of 2015. Next slide. And this is the component in Fairbanks that's essential to it. Our company, Quanta, is actually looking at projects like this in the lower 48, ask the question, well, if we get involved with this plan, we actually do some construction financing, where's the other end of it? And they're very keen on what happens down here and could possibly be, and Ray will talk about this in a minute, could be a possible investor in the downstream portion of it. So, go ahead.
Thanks, Bob. Our CapEx is lower, and one of the reasons for it is not just because we have a simpler, superior design, it's because we also know who to call to build it. These guys build stuff cheaper than anybody else on the slope. I know I've used them. And I've used them when we weren't dealing with somebody else's money, we were dealing with our own money. Let's see. We want to introduce this concept of virtual pipeline service. Let's go to the next slide. We think it's a great way to leverage Senate Bill 23. Pricing is an issue. We've agreed to go with the RCA model. You're not going to get a cheaper deal than that. You know, that's the reason why they do what they did. And we can go into greater detail with staff on that later. Go ahead. Keith, I'm going to introduce right now. He's been here a long time. He was with us, like I say, FNG and CH2 and Melodico. Now he's working with us here. Go ahead, Keith.
I'm going to talk about the numbers real quick. We talked, obviously, that's what we're all here for, is viable candidates. The numbers are really the difference makers. Capital expenditures, $130 million for the plant and all the infrastructure to support that plant. Adding the completion reserve that ADA required in the term sheet, the total spectrum post capital expenses, $130 million. Which is far less than the original $207 million original budget. How we source that capital, $120 million from the previous page. We've got the spectrum contribute equity of $20 million. That financing available is $125 million, which we would use the balance for, approximately $120 million, leaving a remaining balance of $5 million. Then you've got the ADA appropriations. $45 million, also referred to as the $57 million grant money. The spectrum model doesn't require us to use any of that for the project. So that could be redeployed in Fairbanks or more hiding to induce more customers to convert to in the boilers, the home heating oil, any additional financing down there, or wherever critical need is for the entire IEP project to succeed. We feel that we have a $50 million extra surplus of funding that could be redeployed. So that's operating expenses, we are at $4.7 million for the on-site. OpEx is not included, property taxes, depreciation, gas, fuel sources, the home office. But I think this is very competitive and very cheap based upon what we do in Arizona, upscale from North Slope, very reasonable cost here.
It's different than what's in the financial model.
The financial model has full suite of services that are going to be included. We agree, as Ray mentioned, to the RCA rate setting model for full transparency. We will just use, based on the operating expenses, depreciation, interest, and return on equity, divided by the total volume of gas sold, and that will be the price. Spectrum return and the profit spectrum based on not on market value, not on the total cost plus of all the expenses, but just profit is just fixed on what spectrum converted in equity. So just a return on spectrum equity. Full transparency again is the objective. Typically, to do that, you do that in exchange for exclusive service area. In this case, there is no monopoly granted to spectrum for this site. Instead, we have this preferential sets financing terms, so that's why we agree to do that in trade-off, because at the end of the day, the homeowners and the residential users in Fairbanks would benefit from the SB 23 money projects. We're open to a pricing strategy that ADIP would like to entertain if we want to continue to take the vagrants with larger customers down the road, if we want to, how we want to market to the alternative fuel market, the transportation markets. We are completely open. We have preferential customers that are saved by AIA, so that's fine. Next slide. Again, some of our previous proposals from Spectrum were not fully compliant with what AIA was looking for. We thought of a phased-in approach with one transmission link, but just to verify that this model you've seen, $140 million of CapEx, is going to be fully compliant, 9 BCF, two-train, double truck loading facility, as per the ADIA requirements. So it's fully compliant, and there is a virtual storage issue, no longer an issue. Bottom line, that lower CapEx, low OpEx, present the greatest opportunity to deliver low cost to the FedEx consumers for us to be quite good. One quick comment is that there are some issues with the financial summary that makes acknowledge that these things are there. There might be an addendum to the expected price that you see.
Thank you, Keith. Go ahead. If somebody wants to hang out for the meeting, go through all the slides you can, but we got to get to the important one. Skip this one. We've got a game changer at this virtual pipeline service, and we wanted to roll this out. Quanta came back to us and said, look, we're interested in doing this all over the state, not just in Fairbanks. So this is what we want you to think about. We see this only as an option that we can add to what we've been talking about. So it's not dependent upon it. We don't make anything conditioned on it, but we can go into leveraging Senate Bill 23. Next slide. And Quanta's a big outfit. We did too. They have $6.5 billion in revenue, $6 billion in market cap. They got lots of money to go, so no problem. Here's some of their projects going to the state. Next slide. Next slide. One of the beauties of the VPF model is it's one party responsible to get the gas from Fruto delivered to a gate station, back into the form of natural gas and into somebody's pipe. So you won't get into any of this finger pointing like, we're concerned about that. We're concerned about something not coming together in Fairbanks in a timely manner to have a plant in Fruto that's ready to go and not have something on the southern end of the lake. Go ahead, next slide. What does it look like? Okay, here's the plant, here's the trailers. And this is the FNG satellite down in Fairbanks. The satellites will look just like that, except a little bit bigger. Next. We proposed a joint venture. Our company isn't deep enough to put all these satellites in and everything, but Quanta is. And they're willing to do it on the same model, the same rate utility model pricing. Go ahead. This kind of speaks for itself. Let's get to the next slide, I think. Go ahead. Let's get to the map. This is about, okay, here's the point. When we started looking at this, and we asked the Quanta people, asked the question, how many places could we put this? Then we started looking, and I spent 3 weeks in China in January looking at what they're doing over there. And they've got small satellite plants. They've got satellites smaller than this tape, and they're delivering to them with bobtail trucks. So we started looking at, where could we take LNG by truck? And I'm not talking about buying the trash stuff. We did this. That deal in South Keaton, Howard Nugent, I did that. And in a couple of months, we had that little hammered out. But the town of Calcutta didn't get it, just the lodge. So these little flames are the different sizes, and we kind of summed them all up. And it's not a huge amount of gas, but it's a nice complement to what the project's looking like. And play the next slide. And it's a huge deal for people at these town sites. And also, they're not all towns. Some of them are like Fort Lawrence is a mile. These guys are suffering from low gold prices. They could sure stand to have some lower energy prices. And there's no reason this project can't support that. And so what we've been trying to do is come up with a way to increase or enhance the project's overall chance of success by increasing the market. Next slide. RCA cost of service. No cross subsidies are needed.
And we don't have to have continuing subsidies either. This doesn't need to be like PCE or anything like that. This can go out and if you want to put some, if you want to buy down the price, you can put some 3% money into the satellite facilities. If they want to do that, that's great. Next slide. You need a single experienced team to pull it all together. If you, I think we can skip this to the next slide. Okay, so our site was validated by CDNI. The process has been validated by Lindy and CDNI. We're the lowest priced LNG producer in the United States. We don't need the grant funds. That can be spent in Fairbanks. We grant the form, we do it every day. Okay, that's the end.
Thank you, Ray. Obviously, you've done this before. All right, I'll entertain questions from the board.
Another question. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things, just in reviewing your term sheet, that really caught my eye yesterday, and I'm a big proponent of Ada's role in this project, but I also a little concerned about us unnecessarily assuming a significant, if not all, of the market demand risk on this project. And so I'm just more of not being an LNG expert. I saw in there you the provision allowing you to offload the second train to Ada for $72 million credit in the SETS loan. I'm just curious, what would Ada actually do with the second train in this project?
Oh, part of it, see, Keith mentioned we thought we kind of initially favored a phased-in approach where we put one train in. There's other options, other locations. Galbraith, for example, Point McKenzie. We own the land next door to that LNG plant that's over there. We're not sure that within 2 years we won't see Cook Inlet prices come back down to be more competitive with Prudhoe. We know that the pipeline down to Pump Station 4 has got excess capacity. It's 130 miles closer to Fairbanks. We know it can't be done on the time schedule that Senate Bill 23 dictates. But give it another year, and you might see Galbraith as a more logical location for expansion. And Prudhoe, I'll bet your paycheck that third train will be built in Prudhoe. That you might, you know, we'll build two trains, but we're not sure the second train is going to be all that useful there. And it might become non-competitive with other supply points. That's our concern, and we're kind of being forced to build it because that's what Ada wants. That's what the state wants. And that's a risk they should take. 72, we can defend the number, we can negotiate the number, but at some point, if we wind up with a plant for 5 years, if we could have done all of this with just one train, and we got pushed into building the second train, it's not fair for us to have to take that risk, you know, absent an offtake agreement. Well, nobody's come forward with an offtake agreement, so, you know, the state wants it, that's what the Bill 22 is about. That's
how
we came up with that.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, just to follow up on you asked the question, the second part was what would Ada do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you could relocate one. I think it would be useful elsewhere. And either Galbraith, potentially Nenana, Point McKenzie. Those are all three potential locations.
Ray, do you understand Ada will require the ability to approve sales contracts for gas?
Yes.
The spectrum price in regard to the plant, the spectrum price is substantially lower. Would Spectrum be willing to guarantee that price?
Yes.
Okay. Spectrum intend to use any used or reconditioned equipment in the plant?
No.
Okay. Presentations, we've talked about propane. What have you done to...
We put propane in the budget.
And I saw that in 3% of LNG capacity?
I don't know that the term sheet caught up with the budget.
Okay.
They wanted the propane in there. We, in the term sheet, we argued that, let's deal with propane after we get the LNG sales where it needs to be. And then you also, if you don't get the LNG sales where it needs to be, you don't have to worry about propane. You don't have it.
So,
and then the other thing was we're concerned with is that Floor 48 and the North American market for propane is flooded right now. And we think it may be cheaper to deliver it from Canada than it is to make it through the South.
Okay. there was an issue with mixed refrigerant. What are the environmental and the safety issues? Where does it come from in the States, and how does it get to the slope?
Mixed refrigerants, everybody's got their little secret recipe. Ours is a five-component mix. It's primarily nitrogen, basically, methane. Those two components make up the most of it. Then we get into some propane, which we can buy commercially, and isopentane and some butane. You know, and isopentane comes in a bottle that looks like a 100-ton propane cylinders. And we've got in our design, we don't have a flare stack. We won't have any flare. But what we will be doing is we've designed a mixed refrigerant skid, we call it, and it's got a storage valve on it, and it's got a compressor. And so when we shut the unit down, we actually evacuate the refrigerant out and put it into this bottle. That skid also has the supplies to make up. So let's say it's getting colder, and you want to remove some of the heavies. When you restart, you can actually pull the heavies. They'll condense in your receiver. In summertime, when we want to put some heavies back in, we have a chromatograph there. It tells us what our composition is, and we can say, well, we need to add 10, 20 pounds, 30 pounds of propane or butane or isopentane or whatever.
So does it come to the slope in a thermos of some sort?
And well, the propane start somewhere? It's the same. We have propane delivered to Prudhoe routinely, but then the other components will come in shipping.
So you bake the cake at the plant.
Right.
It doesn't
our
come up.
Our plant will have the ability. It'll real-time monitor what the mixed refrigerant composition is,
okay,
and if we want to change it. And we will be continuously monitoring how much fuel is going in the turbine and how much LNG is coming out of the coal box. That's what we look at. Just like our plant in Ehrenberg, we read that electric meter every day, and we get the scales. The truck's moving off, and that's how we decide. That's how we determine what our plant efficiency is in kilowatt hours per gallon.
On slide 37, you made the offhand comment. Boy, are we going to handle a lot of CO2? So this isn't just for you. I suspect this is for all three proposers. Talk a little bit about what does that mean? And I guess I'm thinking about we keep dancing around this thing called the air permit as the kind of the elephant that's sitting over there, and it's going to hold this whole thing up if we don't get it. How does that play into North Slope gas and this air permit that we're going to get? Is it a significant amount of CO2 that's going to create a problem?
I don't remember it offhand, the number of tons. The actual issue with the air permit is, for us right now, is not. So we're at 41 tons. We need to get it to 40. It's a Title V permit no matter what. But the CO2, you know, it's coming into being more of an issue. And to be honest with you, the solution is right there in Prudhoe. We're right next to this injection site. But we've got to overcome some political issues, commercial issues with the Prudhoe Bay unit to be able to do things like return the CO2 and put it in the ground. That's not on the table. I'm not proposing it now, but it makes a lot of sense, and it'll happen eventually. It's kind of like chances are if we continue to haul LNG from the North Pole, it'll come out of Galbraith at some point. But at some point, CO2 is going to get reinjected, but right now we're going to ban it.
What percent of CO2 is in the North Slope gas normally?
12-13%.
How would that compare to Cook Inlet gas?
Oh, it's a whole lot more. Cook Inlet gas, the gas, if you look at just the Beluga River, has no CO2. At the plant at Point McKenzie, we didn't have any CO2 removal to speak of at all initially. And then we found there's one field that had a little bit of CO2. When they would bring that field online, it would start causing this problem. We had to install amine pipe. So most gas doesn't have, other pipeline gas specifications, 2% CO2. It's 12%. This isn't pipeline gas. This is another thing that annoys me about the price of gas. You know, they're talking about Henry Hub gas prices, and there's nobody in Henry Hub that will let this gas in the pipe. This is garbage gas.
I guess I'm just thinking about that air permit, and I mean, just think of the current administration in Washington and all this going on right there about CO2 and sequestering it and all that. And when you said that, I went, oh, I wonder if that's an issue for whoever does this thing.
We've got a lot more green points going for us here, though, than we do the CO2 emission issue. And look at the benefits of the displaced diesel with this much LNG. It's still a big net gain. But there's an easy gain for environmentalists to pick up that CO2 and say, let's put it in the ground. But there's a lot of regulations with injection wells and things like that that have to, that has to be addressed.
Thank you for that.
Susan, you have I have a question for you. As far as the pad and the development of the pad, there is a cost in there of $2,500 per day. What is that cost, or how was that, how did you come to terms with that?
We've been dealing with the project for quite some time now, and what we did was we said we're going to put something in there for the time it takes to put it yet. We were a little, I don't know, we were struggling with how to deal with state involvement in the project. We thought the best approach would be that somebody signed an off-take agreement, let us do what we do best.
Right.
And now we're going to wind up with that state involvement. At some point, we need to recover some of our time, our cost of time.
So that fee actually is retroactive to when you start
actually,
the engagement process?
Today, from this point forward.
Okay.
So I'll just follow up. You didn't put any of that cost into the cost of the plant itself, building the plant.
No, I think we have probably been in the theater. We admit that.
Okay.
We might miss up, but we're not going to miss
it. $140 million.
All right.
Okay, one last question. Go back to the methane issue that you were, when you were talking about the different kinds of technology and the environment in Prudhoe Bay being very different because it's not pure, to say pure. What's the methane component there?
As far as the efficiency of two different processes, I just had a conversation with a guy named Joseph Back. He's the head guy for Cosmodyne. And he had to make a presentation at the same conference I was speaking at. And he admitted that, you know, that the nitrogen process gets close in efficiency to a mixed refrigerant process only in cases when you're dealing with a pure methane stream.
Okay.
And for Prudhoe Bay, even after we take the 12% CO2 out, what we're left with is not pure methane.
Okay.
We still have a lot of heavies in there. So, and you're going to condense those heavies in the process. And because you're condensing the heavies, the nitrogen, let's say if you were just trying to condense the propane out of the stream, you wouldn't be using nitrogen to do it. So the mixed refrigerant has the benefit of having butane and propane and those other components that could work better on that application.
Another question? Gary?
So, Ray, I learned today about a merchant plant. So that's a plant that processes gas for others. Has Spectrum entered into any agreements with utilities or companies that have gas that would be converted into LNG?
No. We've talked to several, but most of them are all waiting, pending the outcome of what agency.
Has any company or companies committed to make use of gas processing services that Spectrum is proposing to offer?
As far as committed?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Wilson, any questions before we...
I don't have.
Is there any more time? Mm-hmm. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm just trying to understand this management fee with the point on slide 41 about construction performance risk reduction by Spectrum that ADA doesn't close its loan until the plant is operational. So can you help me orient where that $2,500 fee that was referenced fits in to where ADA is paying for it ahead of time? I guess I'm a little confused about the order.
Under the plant components and the startup costs and infrastructure, we have a management fee built into all of those numbers.
Okay.
And with the total on engineering and everything, it's close to $9 million.
So that would be covered during the construction phase by the construction financing, and then afterwards, ADA loan would come in and take all of those costs.
That covers it up until what we call the third closing in the term sheet.
Okay.
The first closing the one where, you know, you reached an exclusive deal, we just talked with each other, and they also get the right to take the pad if they want to take the pad and spread it around, further develop it, and what have you. And then if they don't do the second closing, then there's a breakup fee, and then they can also just take the pad and use it for their other projects or what have you. But if we go to the third closing, that's when we actually do the term financing, mm-hmm. the and that's when we pay off quanta.
Yes.
Okay, and we use the our $20 million would have already been put in.
Chair, could I ask a question on that?
Go ahead, Ted.
When is the third closing done, right? When
it would be after startup of the plant. See, our the point I was trying to drive home to you on this risk thing is, what happens if the plant doesn't start? For whatever reason. Well, it's real simple. Bob doesn't get paid. I mean, the pressure's on this guy. He's got to call his headquarters and say, well, we hadn't got the thing to turn on yet. And until they get it turned on and it makes its performance tests, we don't pay. Ada doesn't have any money out. So we put the risk on a construction company, and they're quite confident in their ability to build the plant and make it run right. And they've reviewed the design in great detail. They've got engineers doing the detail work now, but we gave them the product that we selected, and they've taken it, and they're running with it. Now we've got them doing the work. We engaged their people. We're paying them now.
So, Chair, could I just follow up?
Go ahead, Chair.
Could you give me then, Ray, just so I understand it, the first closing would be after we do an initial term sheet, is what you're saying?
The term sheet that we submitted had three closings proposed.
Right.
Closing number one provided for the exclusive arrangement, and also it provided that you have an option on the way. And then it also triggers a debt management fee of $2,500 a day. And then it said in there that we close on March 7th for the second closing. And that's when we developed all the definitive agreements. You know, there's a lot of paperwork to do on this between when we would do the first closing and the second closing. And after the second closing, everybody sit back and watch because we've got to get the project built and running. And after it's running, then we'll do the third closing. I mean, the trucks will have already delivered LNG to Fairbanks before we pull the trigger on the third closing. This is probably the only project that says, you know, you don't have to pay anything until the LNG is in the tank at Fairbanks.
So, Ray, are you proposing to do the trucking also?
If you say you want to do the VPF, yes, we'll handle the trucks. Will we do it ourselves and buy every truck, or will we have to hire the usual suspects? The tractors, as long as they run on LNG, we'll probably hire the usual suspects. The fleet of trailers we'll own, the joint venture would own.
Michael?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just want to be clear that I'm not hearing something wrong. You just said that the Ada wouldn't pay until the gas is delivered into Fairbanks. But isn't it when the plant runs and meets the specifications in the term sheet?
Right, but in order to run the plant, you got to take the product somewhere. So we're going to be hauling product during the performance test. The performance test will take 3 or 4 days at least, and we don't have 3 or 4 days of storage. When we turn this plant on and we start making 300,000 gallons a day, you know, we're going to run out of storage in about 22 hours. Mm-hmm. So the trucks will have to be lined up. And they're going to be taking the product out. And we do this in Ehrenberg. We have the same arrangement with our client there, is that we had to do a performance test and ensure our plant delivered the goods. And if it doesn't, the contract addresses that. Same thing with this deal. There would be a contract provision in there, say, if you don't make your numbers, then there's a penalty.
Ted?
Sorry, Commissioner, did you have to? Ray, just quickly, and apologize, I'm jumping in for it. And with the Quanta representative here, they're willing at the time we're negotiating with you to put some type of agreement together on the construction financing to agree to what you're saying with the third closing?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Michael, do you have any follow-ups?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Jerry?
Go back one slide, go up one slide, 58, please. So, probably not a question for Ray, but a question for Nick at a future time. If you move the $45 million under funding utilized, what is the plus and the minus of that? on the whole stream of costs to the burner tip?
I can talk first, Gary, and then Nick, where are you? You're back here. We believe there's a balancing again, Gary, on if you use the port, or say, we're saying right now $35 million into the plant. Mm-hmm. Of course, then you're not having, you're not paying principal or interest on that $35 million, then of course reduces the total cost of gas coming out of the plant.
That's in the Nick's model.
In Nick's model.
Probably so, okay.
So we can run another model. I believe we have it. We have it that could show you what it would do to the cost of gas. And then utilizing the SETS fund into the, I'd have to go back, into the distribution system by taking, its change is about 4 or 5 cents, Nick, on the distribution.
The SETS distribution?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
And we can get you that information of switching out and using all sets versus a combination of sets and capital appropriations.
I mean, there's some people that don't want that $45 million to go anywhere other than, or that $50 million or whatever, 0 to 50 to go anywhere other than into that plant.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out what the trade-off is for the first dollar or the last dollar to do that.
You bet. And we can, we have that model. I think Nick has probably 10 different models
okay.
going on.
Right.
So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's been discussed when we were discussing with the legislature where you put that capital appropriation. And that's why I believe that when we were discussing with the legislature that we were putting into the plant, because then that cost or savings by not paying principal and interest through the plant is benefiting all interior Alaskans that would be using the plant, because you're looking at more than just Fairbanks. You're looking at, you know, the mines, other communities.
Sure.
So that was the theory about putting the appropriation sure. into the plant.
It attaches itself to every molecule that comes out of there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can we comment on that?
Even?
No.
Oh, nope. Oh, sorry, Terry.
No, we're just taking questions.
So. Okay. I apologize.
Thank you.
All right. Any other
questions? I'd like to hear what. Did you have a comment on that, Rick?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what you said.
If you want to substitute grants for the SETS money, we're okay with that. That's a pass through for us. If you remove that much interest out of the equation,
under
the RCA model, it just reduces the.
Yeah, I'm with
you. Any other questions?
Actually, one for clarification. I apologize.
Go ahead.
I feel like I'm going to wake up in a cold sweat thinking about mixed refrigerants and bunkers. So you've operated mixed refrigerant plants of this size?
No.
In the past? You have not?
We don't own them.
Okay. Thank you.
Of course. That's correct. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. And again, it's okay to put your presentation on.